Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V26 Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Visit Lowe's and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 7/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
Time for Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the show. My partner in crime, Kurt Hoag, is on the other line. He is already in Pittsburgh looking for food. I just touched down, Kurt. Thank you for logging on with me here just before bedtime in Pittsburgh. The Brewers getting set to start a three-game series against the Pirates. So Kurt, what are the dinner options tonight? That's usually a question I have for Todd, but what do you got left here? It's pretty late on the East Coast.
I've fully embraced the Todd identity now. Fermenti Bros is open. There's not a ton that's like, I'm downtown Pittsburgh, but like the options they're not vast. Shout out to O'Hare for making me do like a 20-minute walk during a half hour layover. So we are hungry. We are hungry. We are also hungry for analysis.
Hungry for baseball. Let's go. After our conversation.
A thirst for baseball chatter.
Yeah, let's just keep going with the analogy. It's a great one. It's a really, really exciting one. Hey, after this conversation, though, I got a conversation with Bryce Wilson, Brewers relief pitcher. He did pitch on Sunday, but I'd be curious if you know exactly why I wanted to talk to Bryce Wilson this particular week, Kurt. Do you have any idea what I was going for on this one?
Did his brother play a football game? Was that
Kurt? It's college football. The season has started. Of course, the Wisconsin Badgers beat Buffalo on Saturday. But yes, Kurt, Bryce Wilson's brother, right. Peyton, is a senior for the NC State football team, and he's very good. He seriously contemplated leaving last year to go to the NFL. He came back for he's had a million seasons like all the athletes have with the COVID year thrown in there. He is 2 years younger than Bryce Wilson, who's been in the big league 6 years, and he is a senior at NC State. It's just very weird how this has all come together, but he actually had an interception in this game against Connecticut. NC State won. Again, he's like one of the best players in the ACC. He's a very good player. So yeah, we talked about that a little bit. I mean, obviously we talked about Bryce Wilson's pitching. He's had a very nice year, but wanted the college football to be strong there. So that's what I got at the end of this conversation. Really enjoyed talking to him. Nice guy. Great guy. Has some interesting experiences in baseball thus far, and football, as it turns out. So we went that route. And okay, so Kurt, just looking for a vibe check to start with. Good week for the Brewers. I think it's a net positive. You play two very good teams, two high-level playoff teams at this point, in the Chicago Cubs, Philadelphia Phillies. You come away 3-3. I think if you had to pick the three to win, I think I like the fact that they got the two against Philadelphia, because now they have the tiebreaker secured against the Phillies. That could come into play if the two of them are battling it out for a wild card spot at the end of the year. Chicago now, season series tied at 5. We always knew it was going to come out of those last three games at the end of the season, and that is still certainly the case with the tiebreaker kind of enveloped in there as well. Both of the losses to the Cubs, close one-run losses. It feels like they could have had one of those games. So I guess you could say it's a little disappointing. It was a two-run loss on Sunday against Philadelphia. But I think it's a positive week. I think it's good for the most part. The schedule softens up here, you know. You got Pittsburgh. I don't know how you feel about the Yankees, but they've obviously struggled this year. So things are going to get a little bit easier for Milwaukee and yet tougher for some of their opponents. So where are you at right now? How are you feeling about the Milwaukee Brewers? 3.5 games up in the NL Central and a couple games ahead of the top. Well, one game ahead of Philly now for the top wildcard spot. How you feeling?
I feel like I've been at a pretty steady level with this team for the last 2 weeks now. The concerns that you have are still there, but those are overshadowed generally by the positive play. The pitching staff continues to be pretty to very good, and this cushion still remains pretty comfortable in the division. And then beyond that, it's even more comfortable in the scheme of the wild card. What magic number 20 or something to clinch a playoff appearance as of today?
That's correct.
We've got 25 games left. It's been, you know, pretty steady. Whether or not they win, they seem to chop a number off of one of the magic numbers every day, whether it's the Cubs losing or the wild card teams losing. So, yeah, it's I would say the vibes are steady, JR.
To paint a real quick picture of the playoff situation here, obviously, you know, it's Cubs, Brewers. Maybe you still think about the Reds in there as well in the chase for the NL Central. But it's the Phillies, Reds, Phillies, Cubs, Giants, Diamondbacks, Marlins, and Reds all fighting for three wild card spots at this point. The Marlins had fallen under 500. They're back after sweeping the Nationals in four games. But the Marlins have a really, really tough schedule going forward. San Francisco's offense is miserable. They cannot get it together. And they are both San Francisco and now Arizona, again, are really in a funk. And they are should be thanking their lucky stars that they're still in the playoff chase. The Brewers should definitely finish ahead of these teams. And then therefore have a wild card spot. So it's not a slam dunk by any means, you know. And I keep updated every day, watching the wild card picture at jsonline.com. But it's pretty comfortable here. And you know, you say that, I say that, you know, only tentatively, because nothing is truly comfortable in September baseball. But that is where we're at. Now, the Brewers did make some interesting roster moves this week. A couple we knew would be coming with the addition of September call-ups. The Brewers added Owen Miller and Clayton Andrews. Those are not going to be sexy additions to a lot of people. Those are going to be guys that the Brewers have seen before to flesh out now their 28-man roster. They then sent down J.B. Bukauskas and brought up Colin Ray to make a start on Saturday. He did, I think, very well for what was asked of him, and we'll talk about his start a little bit. But the bigger story came earlier in the week when the Brewers signed or claimed, I guess I don't even know the terminology, Josh Donaldson, former American League MVP, very good player in his day. He had a horrendous run with the New York Yankees. He's been hurt a little bit, and he has been signed to a minor league deal. He's going to go to Nashville. He's going to, you know, work out the kinks in terms of health, and quite possibly could be getting key at-bats for the last 2 weeks of the season in Milwaukee playing third base, where I still think he might be an upgrade based on how hard he hits the ball, based on his BABIP being just crazy, crazy low this year, which tells me he's been really, really unlucky. So there's a possibility here that you get an upgrade. Now, there's some strings attached. You know, Donaldson is hurt. He is older. And he also has a reputation for not being the best clubhouse guy, whether or not that's founded or not. That's obviously something you worry about with a team like the Brewers, who have, I would say, a pretty good clubhouse thing going right now. And certainly they're winning. And so you wonder, do you mess with that formula just to upgrade marginally in one spot? So Josh Donaldson is what I want to talk about. We could talk about these other roster moves too, but what are you thinking after the Brewers brought him in? How seriously do you think he could be with this team, you know, halfway through September? And just overall, like, what are you thinking here, Josh Donaldson?
So I've posited this, you know, this take before on the pod, Jer, that, like, I think teams too often get caught kind of riding the wave of an overperformance from a guy who, like, his underlying skill set maybe doesn't match, like, that hot of a streak. And then you kind of get caught. Now, you don't want that to happen to you in the playoffs. Andre Monasterio has been gone far above and beyond what the Brewers could have expected, maybe what he even expected. Basically turning into an everyday third baseman, playing, you know, okay to solid defense, and then just kind of hitting and getting on base. Like, his OPS is still right around league average. But I think it is this just feels like the Brewers doing their due diligence to make sure that they are giving themselves the best option that they can have at their disposal at third base going into the playoffs. The numbers for Josh Donaldson, not good. They are not sexy. However, I cannot wrap my head around the .076 BABIP.
That's
in 120 plate appearances. It's like, I don't know how you can have a BABIP that low. It's not like he's like doesn't hit the ball hard. It's not like he, you know, doesn't ever hit the ball on the ground, which is kind of how you can sneak some base hits through. Like, he still hits the ball hard, and it just hasn't worked out this year. Like, I think there's a big reason there to, plus the defense is fine. Like, it's still okay. I think there's some reason to squint and maybe see, okay, it's a month of this guy. Hope maybe he can run into something.
I mean, one of the names that jumps out in my head is Jerry Hairston. 2011, the Brewers brought him in to be kind of a third base option. He He played in 45 games. It was, it'd be much more than what Donaldson did, but ultimately he supplanted a struggling Casey McGee at third base, you know, who'd had multiple years of success, but kind of just ran out of gas a little bit. And in his career, and Hairston ended up being kind of their, one of their best players in the 2011 playoffs, which, you know, is more random, I think, than anything else. But Donaldson still can hit home runs. He still has a really strong hard hit rate. I think it was Mike Petriello of MLB.com who pointed out that BABIP, which is again, for those who don't know, batting average at balls in play. It's not like a, it's just an indicator of how lucky a player has been, really. It would be the lowest ever for somebody with that many at-bats, the lowest ever. Now, there's always some reason for that. There's always some explanation, but luck is usually a huge component of that. So that would at least lend you to think that Josh Donaldson has something left in the tank. And over the course of 2 weeks, of course it could manifest, or over the course of a playoff series, of course it could manifest. The problem though, Kurt, is like, I come back to the clubhouse thing. Like, you hear whispers, you don't really know what they mean. Like, I don't know. There's a couple incidents, but nothing that would scream out like truly overtly terrible person. It's just that there seems to be bad vibes around this guy. I keep using the word vibes. I think I should just say it six times per podcast. I don't know if that's really something that's going to matter here. There are veterans on this team, of course, in addition to many rookies, but there are a lot of veterans who could probably handle that sort of thing. But what do you think of that? Like, is that too dangerous? Is that too risky for a Brewers team to make a change like that, knowing that it could disrupt something?
Yeah, it's risky for sure. I mean, one of the strengths of this team is it's clubhouse right now. It really is a team where everyone gets along. They have good chemistry. It's just like they're, everyone seems to get along with everyone. There's not really any even divisions, sort of like, I mean, guys, there's natural divisions, you know, if the bullpen is hangs out with the bullpen and the hitters with the hit, but like they all intermingle when they're in the clubhouse. It's one of it's not, I wouldn't say it's the top reason, or, you know, necessarily close to the top reason that they're in first place, but it certainly doesn't hurt. And clubhouse chemistry, like baseball people, kind of seems to, like, across the board, people in baseball seem to agree, like, this stuff matters. So this is risky. I can't say too much about, like, Josh Donaldson's track record, because I don't know. I've never seen him in a, like, I've never seen him in a clubhouse. I don't know how he is, you know, how his work ethic is, et cetera, et cetera. I will say that, like, there are a lot of whispers. It's, you know, it's not just a couple things here and there about, Do his teammates get along with him? Do people like him? There's a bit of a track record of there being questions about him as a clubhouse presence. That said, this is only a month. They're in first place. Like, the Brewers clubhouse is already a well-established unit with a lot of veterans. Like, I think guys like Wade Miley are in there, Willie Adames. Like, there's really important people that have already set the tone and the culture in that room. You'd think just for like a month they could make this work. I don't know what these guys' opinion of Donaldson is already, but if you hit and you're winning, all of a sudden these concerns can be squashed. I think that this is a move that you do if you're the Brewers 10 out of 10 times. The other thing is, like, I don't know exactly what it went into this, but if I'm the person signing Josh Donaldson, making this move, right, like, I want to run this by some of those vets in the clubhouse, make sure they're on board with it. Because if they're not on board with it from the jump, then that's a concern too.
Agreed. And this was an interesting week on the waiver wire. The Angels sort of famously, if anyone's followed this, as I imagine many listeners have, just dumped a bunch of players into the waiver, you know, the waiver bloodstream, and teams that had lesser records had dibs on these guys. So the Cleveland Guardians claimed, like, almost all of them. Lucas Giolito, Reynaldo Lopez, Matt Moore. The Cincinnati Reds ended up with Hunter Renfro and Harrison Bader from the Yankees. Like, there were several guys available on the waiver wire. The Brewers really didn't get a crack at most of those guys by virtue of having one of the better records in the National League. But they do take this flyer on Donaldson. So I think it's going to come down to health a little bit. If he's healthy, I think he's going to be given a chance. I'd ask a similar question to something I've asked the last couple weeks, is if there are still moves to be made. Now, the additions at September 1st, they were unsexy. But there's still a possibility that we see Garrett Mitchell toward the end of the year. We've at least been thinking about it. Aaron Ashby had his first rehab appearance over the weekend on Saturday through an inning for the Timber Rattlers. He's going to be used in a relief role, so it's not like he has to build up to 5-6 innings. You know, he can presumably only need maybe 3-4 rehab starts or whatever, and they could at least think about it at that point. You know, there's still names I'd be curious to see up here. Robert Gasser comes to mind. Obviously, Keston Hira, even though I think we've moved on there. I'm not sure, but I think so. So anything else that still jumps out as moves that this team is still going to make? I mean, Craig Counsell said this over the weekend. It's not a sprint yet. There's 26 games left as we sit here Sunday night talking about this. There's still plenty of baseball to go. The roster isn't a set product at this point. So what's left, do you think, if anything, that this Brewers team still is going to address?
I'm going to say this is a sprint.
Oh, okay. You are running a different race.
How many games are left, you said?
26.
Okay, so they're 84% of the way through the season. I feel like when you get through 84%, if you get through like 84% of running a mile, are you sprinting by that point? Maybe. Let me think about it. Let me marinate on that one for a little bit while we talk about moves.
Okay.
Aaron Ashby's the interesting one, I think, out of all those guys to me, because like for as exciting as a Garrett Mitchell return would be, and honestly impressive as it would be considering the injury he suffered, I think Ashby has the potential to be the most impactful addition to this team the rest of the way. But also, it's unclear how well it's going to go. He had his first rehab assignment outing in not in Wisconsin the other day, but actually it was in Wisconsin. I believe they're in Beloit. So not in Appleton, but in Beloit. Went one inning. The reports on the velocity were the concern. That was the concern over like the last kind of month and a half, as his rehab seemed to kind of draw to like a stalemate almost, as the velocity wasn't built up to either like, okay, we want, you know, where they wanted it to be to get in games. Then he got into a game and it was around, like, I heard it topped out at 93, which is not where you ideally want Aaron Ashby to be if he's pitching in a big league game. Now, maybe like a big league game setting could take that velo up a little bit, but topping out at 93 is not exactly optimal. That said, there's still some time left. It was his first rehab outing, but some question marks still around his rehab for sure.
Yeah, it'd be super interesting. I don't see it. I don't think those guys are coming back this year. I think they're probably, especially because the bullpen seems to be kind of figured out. You know, you could argue that maybe a spot at the very back end. Andrew Chafin had a couple good outings this weekend, so maybe he's righted the ship a little bit. But it feels like they got their guys for the postseason. So unless they don't feel comfortable with where they stand in the regular season, I'm not sure how many more tweaks will be coming. You know, one of the most, Colin Ray pitching this game on Saturday and doing pretty well. Now, he didn't go the full five, which I think is completely understandable, but I think did he retire the last like 13 guys or 9 guys that he faced? I don't think it was 13, but like last maybe 9 guys in a row that he saw, or 10 guys. Really good effort for him against a Phillies. You know, they hit 2 home runs off of him because the Phillies are hitting home runs every third batter at this point. They hit 59 home runs in the month of August. That's the most in franchise history. And then they hit, you know, multiple home runs in all three of these games in Milwaukee. So absolutely no shame in what Colin Ray, you know, getting tagged a little bit, but still being able to come through that appearance. Is he the last guy in this rotation? I don't know where Adrian Hauser's at, but it kind of feels Colin Ray's going to get 2 more starts, isn't he? And I don't know if that's exactly the right move, but you know, sometimes at some point you watch it, you see the results and you're like, I don't know if I can guarantee that somebody else in this organization can do better than that. So what do you think? Is Colin Ray going to, you know, just kind of ride the rest of the season out? They're going to have 17 games in a row here at some point following Thursday's off day. So they're going to need all hands on deck in the rotation. What are you thinking there?
We'll see. I think the Brewers are going to take this game by game. Ray will stick around. I don't think they're going to commit exactly to him starting I think it would line up for Friday in New York, just because they got the off day the day before. He'll probably pitch in some capacity, like in some bulk capacity. He'll probably start, but it could be a similar, like, it kind of depends how the pitching lines up. how the bullpen's situated going into that Friday game. It could be sort of an all hands on deck kind of situation again. I don't really foresee like a bullpen game. Adrian Hauser theoretically will be back after missing two or three starts. Like he never stopped throwing. But with those 17 games in a row, yeah, six within the lead that they have in the division, and you know the proclivity that they've shown in the past to rest starters, I could for sure see a six-man rotation if Ray has another. You know, I would say that was a pretty good start from him on Saturday. So if he has another starter outing like that, I could see them giving him some more innings in that capacity. I think I've had I said on here I thought Robert Gasser would make some sense for like the Pittsburgh series, but you can also see what they're doing with Colin Ray. Like it's as for as much of a like known quantity as you can have in a fifth starter who has not pitched in the major leagues like at all since 2016 coming into this year, he's been a fairly known quantity of like 4 to 5 innings he'll give you now, 2 to 3 runs to 4 runs, like you'll stay in the game. And I think that's what they prioritize right now.
Yeah, he does get a share of strikeouts. He does. He has eaten innings, and like you know, I think you said it. I think you said it that they have a known quantity, and there's some comfort in that as well. Put Robert Gasser in the middle of this, and I don't know if you know what's going to happen next. He's had a really good season at AAA. He's obviously going to be in the mix to be in this rotation next year, and I personally would love to see him get his feet wet in some capacity. But do you
I
put that? Do you?
don't think it's going to
Yeah, I
happen
don't
just
either.
because the 40-man thing.
Yep.
I like unless they were going to give him a substantial role in September, I don't think they want. I just don't believe the Brewers see it as like valuable to get its feet wet in September. And then it gives them, you know, makes their 40-man a little less flexible this
Yeah.
winter because they don't have to add him yet.
Right. And I mean, if you want a left-hander out of the bullpen, there's one already on the 40-man pitching in AAA and doing well, and that's Ethan Small. Now, he's had his hiccups at the big league level, and it comes down to evaluation of if you think he can do this at the big league level, but he's been good as a reliever at Nashville. And so if you want a guy to come in and be your lefty reliever, which is all Gasser would be probably, you know, maybe a spot starter too, of course, but I don't know. I think they probably should go with Ethan Small, then they don't have to worry about adding a guy to the 40-man. So we'll see. I mean, I don't know if we'll see any of these guys. This, you know, we may have seen
Yeah,
every big leaguer
I
we're going
think
to
right now
see.
the group is the group for
Right.
sure.
I agree with that. And that group includes some of these new additions, Mark Canha and Carlos Santana. We talked about the clubhouse vibes earlier. I again, we have no way of measuring that. We have no way of actually knowing if that's a benefit or something that can tangibly present itself in terms of output and production, but Carlos Santana seems to be a guy that everyone has gravitated toward. You wrote about the celebrations that they do now after victories, the sort of circle, the dance in the circle. Carlos Santana's behind that. He's obviously a guy who's got a lot of enthusiasm and has seemingly rubbed off on a lot of guys. His numbers are okay. They're you know, quietly a little bit better than they have been typically over the past couple of years, and with which leads you to say at least he's what is expected, and he's doing okay at first base. He's a switch hitter. I mean, it's nice to have him there. Mark Canha had a great week. He had two home runs. He had another one on Sunday. He's been very good, and a guy that right now I don't think the Brewers are going to be taking out of their lineup for any games. I mean, I don't know if they can. So this is a good situation. They have lengthened their lineup. That was the concern, and they've done that. The guys that they added, sure, they're not all stars, but they are doing exactly what the Brewers could have hoped for. So I think the deadline is looking pretty good for them. I know you were really skeptical about Santana, and the numbers aren't like jumping off the page. Seven home runs since getting traded is pretty dang good. But like, what are you seeing from these guys? I mean, are you still skeptical that those moves were truly beneficial to this team, or are you feeling pretty good about where they stand at this point?
Okay, so question. What do you think? I don't know if you looked this up because I have not looked yet. What do you think Carlos Santana's OPS plus with the Brewers going into today was?
I think it's 102.
Did you look this up?
Yeah, I did. I'm sorry. I'm terrible. Yes, I looked it up. That's exactly the number I was looking at. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, okay. I was going to say it was worse than that. So
Yeah, he's above average, and he has been
just
below
because there
average the last
was.
couple of years.
There was such a lack of walks for like a month, which is completely different than what his game is. Like he's a big walk guy. But what overall, like, yeah, I mean, for sure they've been good, and not only have they been good, but we talked about this. Like the bar to clear was pretty low
Indeed.
for like Carlos Santana's taking over first base. First base had been flat out terrible. Mark Canha's played a lot of right field, put some left field, some he's filling it everywhere, but like maybe not exact one exact spot he's replacing, but you kind of think of like the guys who are not in the lineup because Canha is now, their numbers were not good. And
well, Brian Anderson hasn't see, played, by the way, since August 22nd.
Brian Anderson is gone. Is still on this. He is on this team. I saw him with my eyes on Saturday.
I saw him Friday. He's
and I was reminded that Brian Anderson's on the team. Yeah, he's
August 22nd is the last time he stepped on the field.
Which we could get into a conversation there of like, what's the point of carrying a guy that I understand what he's like. He covers you at third base, but Owen Miller's here now. So actually, maybe I don't understand what. Like,
yeah, I don't what, actually. I mean,
you know, what you're doing. Keep, I guess maybe keeping him around as insurance instead of like, you know, it's in case something happens. But you also have Josh Donaldson. Anyway, that's probably the move for Josh Donaldson is an Anderson DFA. But
of course,
now that I've gotten incredibly sidetracked, JR, Mark Canha and Carlos Santana, they just put together like good, tough at bats.
Totally.
It's quality at bats. And I don't know if that's something the Brewers offense was necessarily lacking, but kind of up and down the lineup, they, even some of their hitters who are good, like, don't necessarily always do that. And that's a good process to, over time, produce pretty good results. Like, Yelich puts together good at-bats. Seth Frelick can put together some good at-bats, even though he's really struggling right now. I don't like Contreras. I wouldn't say Contreras is, like, good because he puts up good at-bats. Like, it's just something that's been added to this offense that they didn't have a ton of before. And that, by nature, lengthens the lineup. They draw their walks now. Canha's been getting on base. Some power's in there. It's turned out to be kind of what the Brewers hoped for sure. And like we said, the bar to clear was low, and they are currently clearing it. And if you're in a playoff series right now, you're batting Santana third, and Canha's hitting what, like sixth? That's pretty important.
You know, just talking about Brian Anderson, like Owen Miller's played a fair amount since he's been recalled. It just feels like why didn't you just have Owen Miller here in the first place? Why, you know, instead of Anderson? I guess it was a way because they had the flexibility to send him to AAA, but clearly he's the guy that's going to get playing time ahead of Anderson at this point. But whatever, we don't need to litigate that at this point. I'm sure that'll get fleshed out here over the next couple weeks. Checking in real quick on Christian Yelich and Bryce Turang, two guys that I think are kind of interesting case studies right now. Christian Yelich, I'm not feeling like we're seeing him, you know, really be that guy that he was earlier in the season. So I don't know.
He's no longer back right now.
Right. No. He's
anti back.
Yes, anti-back, or maybe it is about the back if we're talking about injury possibility. I have no idea. He did not start on Sunday. He's still, I don't know, like, he still does good things. It's an interesting situation there. Bryce Turang, I think we are seeing better at-bats from him, and I don't know if the results are necessarily reflecting that on offense. His defense has still been really good, and we could briefly chat about whether you think he is a gold glove candidate. I know that was kind of getting rolled around last weekend. I don't think he is because he didn't spend the whole season here for one thing, which is a minor quibble. I also think there are other guys, second baseman, who I think would rank ahead of him at this point. I think he'll win a gold glove eventually, just not this season. But regardless, defense incredible. And I do think offensively, Saturday night was a good example. I think you're seeing him use kind of all fields. He looks really good in the box right now. So I'm curious, you know, you can talk a little more about Yelich and then just what you're seeing from Bryce Turang.
How many extra base hits do you think Bryce Turang has in his last, well, now 21 games?
I'll say four.
Zero.
Oh, no. That's really low.
He has a 456 OPS in those games.
Oh, well, okay. It's just me.
I mean, like, the defense is still very good. If you want to get in the gold glove conversation, like, I think he's in the mix, but I don't even know if I haven't looked at the metrics, but I would for sure have Nico Horner and Ha-Sung Kim ahead of him in the second base conversation. Yeah, like, well, him going down to AAA, I think, doesn't really matter to me. As far as it goes, like, he's been really, really good on defense, but those guys are also really, really good. And again, I'd have to look up some of the metrics, but it is an interesting decision because, I mean, it's not really a decision. But the Brewers have made a decision that they're going to roll him out every day because of his defense. and then kind of ride the ups and the downs of the offense. I feel like, you know, the offense has for sure looked better since he's come back up. But the, you know, the question on him ever since he was a prospect was, is he going to hit enough? Is he going to hit for enough power? And like he's the average is okay. It's 220, but the power just is not there. But you are getting elite defense, and you know, kind of that's just going to be the Brewers' MO. So he's gonna stick in there every day. I'm gonna, I don't see Owen Miller overtaking him at this point.
His speed, you would have thought maybe a hustle double in there. I can't believe it. I can't think of any reason.
Yeah, he doesn't drive the ball.
Yeah.
Very rarely. He can pull the ball in the air a little bit, you know, when he gets one in the air. He does have some sneaky raw pop from time to time, but it does not show itself regularly enough, like, to drive the ball.
Hmm. Okay. All right. And Yelich, anything else you want to throw in?
I think it's a similar thing as like Terang right now. He's not really driving the ball. There's still some hard hits in there. He's using the opposite field still. He's taking his walks. Like the numbers you can certainly live with, but yeah, the month of August was not a great month for him. And don't know what it is, but if the Brewers can get him back to what he was doing in June and July, I mean, that's huge. We'll just see if you like, sometimes you never know what exactly is holding him back. But if that can get fixed, that'll be big.
Indeed. All right, let's move on. Let's go into some of the more granular details from the week, from these past six games. It's our weekly segment, Three Up, Three Down. Kurt, I'm going to start with a little bit off the beaten path. There was a photograph on Friday night from the Brewers game against the Phillies. They're wearing their City Connect uniforms, and Maury Gash, who is a tremendous Associated Press photographer, he's been in Milwaukee for a long, long time, taking some of the best images that you could think of from sporting events in Milwaukee frequently, and in Wisconsin frequently, Maury Gash, and he took a great photo of that the three base error. Owen Miller puts the ball in play. Alec Baum, you know, lets the ball scoot past him. Three run score was, you know, the go ahead moment in that game, that thrilling game on Friday night against the Phillies. And you've got William Contreras, who's already scored on this play, in a crouch like the umpire, signaling safe, side by side with the umpire actually signaling safe as Tyrone Taylor is coming in head first, and as the ball is, you know, as he's just beaten the throw. It's beautiful. I don't know if you've seen it. It's certainly on my Twitter feed. You've probably seen it with any game story. I mean, it's just a gem. For those who don't know Maury Gash, he's taken he took that photo in the Bradley Center where Dwayne Wade is in the foreground having thrown an alley-oop dunk pass to LeBron James. He's in mid-air about to throw down a dunk at the Bradley Center against the Bucks, and Wade is just sort of like, you know, pimping to the crowd a little bit, knowing that he's just thrown with full confidence, without even looking at it, knowing he's thrown a dunk to LeBron James. I think most people probably know that photo as well. He's awesome. So if you get a chance to check out his stuff, he's not he shows up all over the place because he is with AP. So it's hard to miss him when he's on his game. You know, when he's got a good one. He might have taken that photo from the roof of Ellie De La Cruz sliding home, having stolen home earlier this year. Although I'm not positive that was him. So great photographer, great photo, loved it.
I'll pick it up with Saturday. It was an ode to years past, as I wrote about this in my story. The Brewers had a real Craig Timber game.
Yes.
It's we don't see much of it anymore because expanded roster is no longer, you know, you can't have 40 guys, you can only have 28. And B, the way the Brewers are constructed is entirely different. Like in 2018, they had down the stretch maybe like one guy who would pitch deep into games regularly. That was Chacin. And now their team is built on these incredible starting pitchers that can go deep into games. But for one day, Colin Ray came up. It was, it wasn't just that it was a short start. It was like the whole thing was kind of scripted out. It was like this at this point of the Phillies lineup, here comes Andrew Chafin, who's been terrible, and he's going to pitch well. And then Trevor McGill's going to get five outs, and they're going to use three more relievers to pick up a win. It was a fun little reminder of how the Brewers operated when they dominated in September for 2 years from 2018 to 2019.
Shout out to friend of the podcast, Ryan Topp, who feels that he coined the term Craig Timber. I don't know if that's something we could verify one way or the other.
But, we could probably verify that pretty easily.
Okay. He feels pretty strongly that he's the one who put that in the ether.
All right. I'm going to do some research here while you continue through your down.
Okay. All right. You really don't have to do that this second. Anyway, I am surprised that the Craig Timber moniker seems to be floating around Twitter again because, I mean, first of all, they went like 17-16 last year in September and October. They missed the playoffs by a game. You know, I'm not saying Craig Council isn't awesome and can't put things together in September still, but I just thought, you know, after last year went not great, that maybe that would be retired. And, you know, that last year was the first year where the teams couldn't expand their full 40-man rosters, which felt like that was the reason why he was so good. He seemed to be able to use all these different pieces to work exactly in concert, and now you just don't have that flexibility anymore. So I didn't think that would necessarily prevail, but is Craig Council still manager of the year, right? Like, at least strong candidate for that? I guess I haven't given that a lot of thought lately, but He's got to be way up there, unless you just say, look, the Braves and the Dodgers are just so far and away the best teams. It's got to be one of those two guys, and maybe that's correct. I don't know, but gosh, the guy's got to get a manager of the year here before he walks out the door in Milwaukee. It's got to happen sooner or later.
I don't have a manager of the year vote, but if the Brewers won the division, like I don't really I understand people vote for Snitker. They might vote for Roberts. I always vote for Roberts. Like maybe the Marlins, if they like the Marlins or the Reds or the Cubs, but like I just don't think anyone's got a case on par with Council this year. And manager of the year is kind of a silly award, as it on the whole it's really tough
for sure
to figure out, but he would get my vote. I don't have a vote though.
Okay. Let's number two for me is a question that I'm lobbing back to you, and it's another, let's say it again, it's another vibe check. The bullpen, specifically the hammers that the Brewers have at the back of the bullpen. I wonder if it feels like they're running out of gas to you, because you know, Yoel Piamp has been vulnerable a little bit the last few times out. Devin Williams had a pretty rough weekend, even though the Brewers won both of his appearances. I mean, he gives up a 3-run homer to Trey Turner that really looked like it had given Philadelphia the control of that game. And then the Brewers, of course, rally back, win that game. And Devin Williams ends up cleaning up through the ninth and getting a win. He was asked to get a 4-out save. That was in the eighth inning. That was a difficult situation for him. But that was obviously a big blow. And then on Saturday, he was pretty shaky. Gives up a run again. Put a couple guys on. The tying run was on base. And he was able to shut the door against Trey Turner after he fell behind Trey Turner. So that was obviously a subplot was the rematch between those two guys from the night before, but I don't know, man, it feels like maybe they've reached a point in the season. They have relied so much on this bullpen. They've relied so much in close games on these guys. And you just wonder at some point if the roof is going to cave in a little bit. I don't know. There's no real way around it. They're going to keep playing close games. They need these wins. So I don't imagine they're going to stray from what has gotten them here. But I don't know. I don't know how you feel about it. It feels like there are some cracks in the armor here.
I mean, the bullpen's still a strength of this team. It's going to be the case when you have Devin Williams and, like, the number of options that they have. But, yeah, this is, this is why you go out and get Chafin. Not that, like, Chafin has pitched well or made good on that, but, like, you want to get another arm, like, who's proven, because there's sort of always this, like, how much smoke and mirrors is going on with the bullpen. Like, how much are these guys going to be able to manage a 6-7 month workload, an entire season of high leverage innings? Piamps has been great this year. Peguero's been good. Wilson's been solid. Hobie Milner, I feel like, is the guy I trust the second most in the bullpen.
Right. He's been
now.
Awesome.
I was thinking about this earlier. Like, the numbers in terms of, I don't know, like win probability added, they're probably still lead the league. They've been excellent in that area. It's probably on par with like the 2018 pen, but that's a bullpen that I think you trusted a little more going into the playoffs with, you know, Jeffers kind of ended up flaming out a little at the end of that year, but, you know, Jeffers, Knebel, Hayter, Soria, et cetera, et cetera. Just a little bit of concern. I think not a lot, just a little.
All right, what's your number two? I think I stole some thunder there.
Well, this is not my number two, but Ryan Topp did coin this term.
Really? Confirmed. We're calling that verified.
I found it. Yeah, first tweet, August 30th of 2019.
Holy
Said correct
smokes.
him.
Congratulations to Ryan Topp.
So,
We are vouching for his, we are authenticating his coining of the term Craig Tember.
and yes, I'm sure he'll be very happy about this. Let's go to Wrigley Field, JR. Let's go
Oh,
to Wrigley Field.
must we?
I cannot stop thinking about some just the wild events in these games. They weren't the craziest baseball games you've ever seen. But it was just such a reminder of like, wow, these teams are not separated by much. These games always seem to come down, they're very close. They come down to a little bit of luck to either side. I know that's a contentious topic. I think the Brewers have been lucky in some areas this year for sure, but boy, oh boy, were they not lucky in Wrigley. Lost by one run both games. I think the big play in Tuesday's game was Tyrone Taylor hit a moonshot that the wind knocked down, kept in the yard. Brewers had some more balls that they drove, didn't go anywhere, and they lost 1-0 to snap their 11-game win streak. Coincidentally, their previous loss also 1-0 game, also covered by me on the road, also started by Corbin Burns. We don't need to get into all that right now, but then the next day, UL Piamps with the go-ahead run on third and the eighth with two outs. Ground out the middle from Cody Bellinger, hits it hard, hits it right off of Piamps for a go-ahead infield hit. That was kind of just the way that those games felt that they were going, and the way that they did go. Now, I don't know if you're going to get into Friday's game at all on your next one.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I
Was that
did
your plan?
not necessarily. I did
I'll pick it up. I'll leave a little teaser there.
Okay, sounds good.
We'll continue our luck discussion when we get into Friday's game.
All right, sounds good. So I'll close mine down. Just the week of Mark Canha. You mentioned the Wrigley. Yes, they lost that game, but Mark Canha gets hit by a pitch. This was on Wednesday afternoon, or Thursday afternoon, I should say. No, Wednesday. Wednesday. Gets hit by a pitch to tie the game. Mark Canha, of course, notorious for being able to get hit by pitches, and he was able to tie the game. The Brewers could not capitalize and take the lead, and then the ball off Joel Piamps' foot ends up being the difference in that game. But there was also that play in the fifth, that ended the fifth, where Andrew Monasterio caught a screaming liner and ran over to third base for an inning-ending double play in a huge spot for the Cubs that left the game at 1-0 at that point. That was on Tuesday, and again, the Brewers never scored. They lost that game 1-0, but that was a big play. And Mark Canha again had this bomb on Monday in the game they won. Just I didn't know he had that kind of power in him. Just hit an absolute tank shot. And again, he's been kind of in the middle of everything. If it isn't a couple hits, it's that long at bat that you were talking about at the beginning of the week, beginning earlier in this podcast. He's kind of just contributing in a bunch of different ways. So great week for Mark Canha, and certainly some interesting highlights this week for him.
Friday's game is going to be one that I feel like we're going to remember for a while, the Trey Turner homer off of Devin Williams, but more so, Alec Bohm's just disastrous defensive play. I mean, it's been a while since an opposing defense just totally gifted a game to the Brewers in this way, in a big spot with like one play late in the game. Owen Miller, of course, that wasn't really a rollover, but it just rolls a ground ball to third, two outs on the eighth. Brewers are trailing by one, I believe. Bases are loaded. And I mean, this is a play that a big league third baseman makes 10 out of 10 times. You scoop that ball up and you win the race to third. I think it would have been close, but I think he wins that race pretty easily. Probably could have even gotten Miller at first if he had wanted to. Rolls under his glove, all three runs score. Very indicative of the Philadelphia Phillies. Like it was a lucky break for the Brewers, but my God, JR, the Phillies defense is bang. Kyle Schwarber and left on Saturday was putting together a clinic on what not to do.
Oh, and Nick Castellanos in
This
right,
is like
too.
the Castellanos is not a good fielder. Brandon Marsh actually can kind of go run it down in the
Yeah,
center a little
he's
bit.
solid.
But like JT Realmuto's used to be a great defensive catcher. I don't think the metrics are on his side anymore, especially like throwing out runners. But it's just kind of an interesting look at like how two teams were built. Phillies have all these studs on offense, these studs in the pitching staff, but boy, oh boy, can they not prevent runs from a defensive side of the ball at all? Whereas the Brewers, that's what they do.
I'm not sure if you can still convince me that the Brewers model is the one that I'd rather have in the postseason. The Phillies lineup is it terrifies me, and it should. They mash. They just crush home runs all day long. They are 1 through 9 have something to offer, and they showed that last year when they went all the way to the World Series. I like the rotation. The Brewers hit Aaron Nola very well on Saturday night, but like Aaron Nola's he's good, and then Zach Wheeler is very good. The Brewers were able to get just enough out of him. Big Willie Adames home run there. Otherwise, that could have been a totally different game. You know, they've got Michael Lorenzen that they got at the trade deadline, Christopher Sanchez. They're in good shape on those two fronts. Those are the two fronts to me that always have mattered. Their defense is awful, and to me, that's only going to come up once in a great while. And maybe you can even get on a run where your defense doesn't burn you for many, many games in a row in a postseason. It just so happens that this one was pretty glaring, and you know they committed another error early on Sunday. Like their defense just is it's just not that good. And I don't know. Again, I think the Brewers model is probably the more economical model. You have a team that can win games and also not necessarily break the bank if that's your thing, and you know. Be really strong in close games, which does matter in the postseason. But the Phillies, man, I just want their lineup, and you know, I wouldn't even mind their pitching staff if I had to give up the Brewers, which would be a downgrade, but it wouldn't be a big enough downgrade for me to be too upset about that. Their bullpen last year was really shaky. I don't know if it's quite that bad this year. It's not, you know, it's not one of the best in baseball, but it's fine, I think. So we'll see, because I don't know if they've seen the last of the Phillies. I just have a feeling that the Phillies are going to make some noise in this postseason, whether it's up against Milwaukee head to head or not, I don't know, but there's something there. All right, so that's going to do it for three up, three down, and we could have probably talked about Wade Miley's 5 1/3 hitless innings on Sunday. I mean, the guy was dealing. Then he gives up a couple hard hit balls, gives up a run, things fall apart, a couple home runs after that, and he ends up taking the loss. But that was certainly Oops. That was a really good game. You mentioned Corbin Burnes briefly. I think it's kind of wild that he had a tremendous start in LA, loses that 1-1-0. He has a bad start against Minnesota. The Brewers win that game, come back to win. The offense picks him up. And he has another tremendous start. 7 shutout innings that the Brewers lose 1-0 to the Cubs. 1 run, not shutout, but still, like, just Corbin Burnes. Weird stretch. Also, Saya Suzuki came into that series with the Cubs-Brewers series with a 10-game hitting streak and, like, multi-hits in almost all of them. He'd been incredible. I think he was 0-for-10 against the Brewers. In fact, Candelario, Bellinger, and Suzuki, I want to say they were left with maybe 2 hits. I think maybe even only 1 combined between the 3 of them in that series. So Brewers were able to shut down the big mashers. That's why those were all low-scoring games, but could not put away a couple. Had to settle for just winning 1 out of 3. All right, let's go back in time. We're not done with that Friday game. I got something else I want to say about it in our flashback moment here on Remember When. Yes, Kurt, that Friday night game was pretty special, and it made me think of one, and I don't want to keep going back. I feel like I've spent a lot of time in 2007, 2008 in this segment in the last few podcasts, but I still want to go back to it one more time, to a game against the Phillies at Miller Park then, which sticks out in my mind as just one of the most dramatic, crazy comeback wins that they'd had. Now, it wasn't like a it wasn't an all-timer. It just wasn't in terms of what deficit they were facing, but it had to do with Prince Fielder hitting an 8th-inning home run against Tom Gordon, who was a really good setup man for a long time. This is a 2007 season. He had started to fall off a little bit. He was, I think, 39 years old at that point, but Cole Hamels had just dominated the Brewers for most of the night. Brewers scratch across a couple runs to turn. They'd been down 4, made it a 1-run game, and then Prince Fielder hits a go-ahead home run in the bottom of the 8th. Place goes absolutely bonkers. Bob Uecker has a great call of it. I was listening to it on the radio at the time. I was living by myself and did not have cable and was resorting to the radio broadcast at that season, and this was a really special one. Corey Hart robs a home run. Tadahito Iguchi hit what should have tied the game in the top of the 9th. Corey Hart robs a home run. I think he got all 3 putouts in the 9th inning. Hart had been struggling. He joked later, well, at least I'm tall. And that was true because he made the catch. Just an all-time, at least to that point in Brewers history, you know, before they've gone to any playoff games, it felt like a real moment. A real moment. This was August 4th, 2007. So kind of hitting the home stretch. This is a competitive team. They're a first-place team at this point in the season. Unfortunately, the next night also happened, so it wasn't, it was a very short-lived jubilation. August 5th, 2007, the Brewers carry a 6-1 lead into the 9th inning. They do not keep it. Francisco Cordero, who should have blown the save the night before, but had yet to blow a save at that point in the season at home, ends up blowing the save. Jason Worth had a two-run homer in the five-run ninth inning that tied it. It was a hit-by-pitch brought in a run. Two-run score on a ground ball to Ryan Braun that goes under his glove at third base. Oh, the Ryan Braun at third base days. That was really something. But the Brewers had two outs, and Cordero allowed the next five guys to reach. This was similar to that meltdown in Texas that I talked about a couple podcasts ago. And the Brewers end up losing in extra innings. In fact, Wes Helms, former Brewer and future Brewers hero in 2008, Wes Helms, playing for the Phillies at the time, hit a two-run homer off Manny Parra in the 11th, and the Brewers lose that game 8-6. It is the start of a stretch where the Brewers lost 15 of 20 games in 2007 and ended up falling off the map. They end up missing the playoffs, coming really close and having first place for a lot of that season before they fell off. So there's some good there, there's some bad there, but it definitely got me thinking the energy in the building when Owen Miller's ball got under Alec Baum's glove and you know, scored three runs. The energy in that building felt similar to what was experienced there. Very different circumstances, of course. But this is a first-place team. They did not suffer a bad setback the next night, so they are still a first-place team heading into this week where they're going to be in Pittsburgh and New York. Okay, let's close this down, Kurt. It is your take of the week. It is Kurt Blanche.
Ryan Braun sends it to left center and deep. Get up! Get out of here! Gone for Ryan Braun! He just hit a walk-off
home. All right, Joe, let's talk playoffs.
Playoffs.
Let's talk playoff rotation.
Are you gonna make fun of me some more for suggesting earlier this year that Colin Ray and Julio Teheran might want to slot ahead of Freddie?
No, actually,
I have apologized for that, Kurt.
My take is going to not on purpose, but it will line up with what you're saying.
You're saying Freddie should be game one.
So I have thought it through a little bit. Freddie Peralta was the best pitcher in baseball in August. He looks really good. I mean, his stuff has looked really good all year, but now the results are matching it. Here's what I'm thinking. I think the Brewers, if you're the Brewers, you want to find a way to make sure that you get all of your best pitchers into those three games. In like, if you keep going, great, but you got to win all those three games first. And therefore, well, not including, you know, some of the like Devin Williams type guys, Wade Miley is up there in their group of best pitchers. He's just a different kind of best pitcher than Woodruff, who, you know, could throw you a shutout in a playoff game, or Burns, who could throw you a shutout in a playoff game. I think, JR, that you line up Wade Miley to pitch a game three, and you have Freddie Peralta coming out at some point in these three games in some spots that just really, really, really matter.
Interesting.
Kind of like kind of similar to almost what we saw from him in like 2020, where he's just getting multiple outs. And he can give you real bulk of now. Maybe it's piggybacked with Miley. But I think what Wade Miley can give you something. I don't know if you want six innings out of Wade Miley in a playoff game. I don't know if the Brewers have like those middle inning arms. Whether it's in a Burns start or a Woodruff start or a Miley start or a Freddie Peralta start. And Freddie Peralta just, I don't know. I just feel like it just gives you that sort of weapon. Now, that's probably not what they're going to do. You can line it up pretty dang easily to go Burns, Woodruff, Peralta, Peralta, Burns, Woodruff, Woodruff, Peralta, Burns. There's some other permutations in there. You can do the math on your own.
I think it's the question I would have is what comes next? Because obviously you want to, you know, there's no tomorrow if you don't win that first series, that best of three series. Presumably, if the season ended today, it's at American Family Field. But you're already at such a disadvantage with the lineup of your rotation going into a situation where you're facing the Braves or the Dodgers. If you don't have a true top four starter to offer to that in that first game, do you have any chance at all? I mean, obviously, Adrian Hauser could work three strong innings, four strong innings. You know, we've kind of talked about that before, but I don't know. Like, I don't know if they're going to build their playoff roster allowing for that. You know, I don't know. I feel like they'd be too far behind the eight ball going into that second series to try to be too experimental with how they deploy their starters in that first series. But I mean, it's going to be all hands on deck. So I guess it opens up a lot of crazy scenarios. I guess I'm not sure.
Well, let's see. I mean, division series game one would be Yeah, you'd have to pitch someone on 3 days rest.
Well, they're not going to do that.
And I mean, I still think you'd do it. That's my opinion. I thought this over like in the last one day. I might not think this strongly tomorrow. Like it is pretty enticing to line up Burns, Woodruff, and Peralta. Like I might be galaxy braining this, but my thinking is like Peralta could be so valuable in so many different roles. And maybe that this really is just overthinking it, but pitch your best pitchers in like close games, instead of having him pitch maybe in like a 3-run game or whatnot, or a 4-run game, like get him in there if the situation calls for it, in the first two games.
Sure. I mean, obviously the Nationals did this in the wild card game. They went from Max Scherzer to Steven Strasburg. It wasn't even a question, of course. It's a one game playoff, so that's a little bit of different circumstance. But yeah, I could see them getting creative, like you said. Best pitchers get them out there. They don't maybe have the middle guys. And Wade Miley, I think he would even say he's probably maxes out at a 6-inning pitcher. He's probably more like a 5-inning pitcher. So and Freddy Peralta, to be fair, is not. He's not a 7-inning pitcher every time out either. He's kind of trended toward that as we've gotten later in the season, but he's a guy who for the last few years has been mostly capped at 6. So you could also
So
see that too.
the interesting scenario, JR, is if you lose game one, Brandon Woodruff pitches game two, and like the situation calls for it, maybe like sixth inning, sixth, seventh inning. Like, what do you try? Do you try to sneak Peralta in there, or? I don't think that's what ends up happening, but I think that's the argument I'm trying to make is like I would be flexible with his usage.
Sure. Yeah, that is like you mentioned, National League Pitcher of the Month, Freddy Peralta for the month of August. Truly, truly dominant month for him, and he's top 5 in the National League in strikeouts at this point. I think he might be top 3, although I'm not sure. I haven't checked in the last couple days. But he's been really something else. So encouraging stuff. Encouraging stuff. Again, the Brewers are in Pittsburgh. That starts Monday. Kurt Hoag will be there for better or worse. Road Kurt, as he is.
We're back, baby.
Yeah, he has the record is not great with Kurt in attendance on the road, but maybe this is the turnaround they need. The New York Yankees, of course, will welcome the Brewers in. That'll be an interesting series. The Yankees have been flailing, but they're still like right there around 500, so they're not something you could just shrug off. Certainly, very crowded AL playoff picture, and then the Brewers will be back home for a couple series on the other side of that. Again, not a lot of toughies left on this schedule. They do have those Cubs games at the end of the year. They've got the Marlins for a whole bunch for 7 more games, some on the road, some at home. So that's something to figure in. But for the most part, the Brewers are playing teams that they should beat. So we'll see how that goes here the rest of the way. Kurt, thank you for joining us. Any last thoughts before I send you off to find food there in Pittsburgh?
I'm getting pizza.
Pizza! Thank you, Kurt. Really appreciate you joining us this week. Again, find everything he has at jsonline.com. All the Brewers coverage as we get here. Best time of the year, September baseball. It's awesome. Obviously, we have a lot of college football stuff as well up there about Wisconsin, and that is partly why I brought in my next guest here, Bryce Wilson, Brewers relief pitcher. Talked to him about his brother who plays for NC State and a whole lot more. So hope you enjoy that interview with him here. We will chat with you again next week. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye. My guest is Bryce Wilson, relief pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers. And I don't know how many people know that you have a brother who plays college football. He's only 2 years younger than you, right? Plays college football for NC State. He is an NFL caliber talent who almost went pro last year and had a good opener. So did you get to watch the NC State UConn game? I'm assuming you did somewhere.
Yeah, I did, actually. It was nice having the off day yesterday. I usually our games interlap with his, so I usually never get to see him, but it was nice yesterday with the off day and being able to watch him and watch the whole game.
And your brother Peyton is his name, Peyton Wilson, he got the game-clinching interception. A little nerve-wracking, I imagine, because UConn, I don't think, was supposed to do what they did and make it close. Were you feeling a little nervous as the game went on?
Just a little bit. I mean, I had faith in their defense. Their defense is good year in, year out. New quarterback this year looked good in his first game out, so looking forward to watching the rest of the season. Yeah.
He almost. My understanding is he almost went pro last year. It was really a close call. Got some advice from scouts, decided not to do that. Did you weigh in on that? Did he seek advice from you through all of that process?
I mean, he asked me, and my opinion with his injury history, what I told him is, you know, NIL offers another option as far as, you know, in the decision of staying and going, and NIL helped in that decision. And with his injury history, you know, take the money, get hurt again, you're an undrafted free agent. If you have a healthy season, you are looking at getting drafted pretty high, and you have a good amount of money already in your bank account.
I'm still hung up on how he's 2 years younger than you. You're a sixth-year MLB veteran, and he's still a senior. The COVID year thing has everything thrown off. How good of a football player were you? What was your football acumen like back in the day?
So I was All-State my senior year. I had multiple offers to go play both in college. So, I mean, I played. Baseball was obviously the better choice for me.
How tough of a call was that? I mean, how close were you to choosing football, or was it not close in the end?
Yeah, I mean, me and my parents sat down and we figured out a number that it would take, and that number was met. So we just put the decision solely on financial value.
Sure. My understanding is you also had a perfect game, I think, in the playoffs. Was that your senior year in high school? So tell me about that. Is that the best game you've ever pitched?
I wouldn't say that's the best game I've ever pitched. That one was really cool. I mean, I think it was like 65 pitches too, which was also nice.
Awesome.
It was cool. It was a quick game. It was awesome. Yeah.
All right, so maybe this is the best game you've ever pitched for the Atlanta Braves in the playoffs, your playoff start in 2020. Tough business because you got that one opportunity and you had such a good game. So what do you take away from that? What memorabilia do you have from that? Like what sticks out about that one experience that you had?
So that was an awesome experience. Just for them to trust me and getting in that start in the playoffs there in such a critical situation was huge, and I was able to make the most of it. I think I have pretty much everything from that game as far as memorabilia goes.
Sure.
I did use the glove all last season, but that glove is officially retired. So, but yeah, I mean, it was awesome, and it, just the experience of that, and it was a little different in the playoffs or in that COVID year. We only had, I think, 12,000 people, so a little bit different. But you know, just against a team like that in that situation, it's still the game of baseball.
And then, unfortunately, you're up 3-1 now. The Braves are against the Dodgers. It did not end well. And even going back to your debut. I think that's a 1-0 game, right? Like you had a great debut, and then they sent you right back down. Is that how that went?
Also
a tough business.
Yeah. My debut, I think I went 5 scoreless. We scored 1 in the first inning, and we ended up winning 1-0.
Man, that's so. As you go back down, how do you take that? Because you've just had one great outing. You've made your debut. It was awesome, and now you have to kind of go back to not the drawing board, but you got to go back to like soaking up innings at AAA. Like how did you handle that?
Yeah, I mean it was well. So they did it good, and the piece where they told me that it was a spot start going into it, and I kind of assumed as well. You know, I think at that point it was like 3-5 days in a row that we had had somebody debut a spot start, so it was a little bit easier than being sent down just kind of out of nowhere. And then they had a plan for me after that to come back up September 1st, so it was good.
You get traded in 2021. Did you get a World Series ring? So they had to have. Okay, so where do you keep that? Is that with your stuff here in Milwaukee? Or?
No, that's in my safe at home.
Okay. I don't even know how that works. If I assume everybody who's played even like one inning gets a ring. You were there half the year, but I guess I don't know. I guess each team is different, but I'm glad you got you got to get some jewelry for that. The easy answer to this question is you were starting last year and now you're in a different role. But if you had to pinpoint what's so different about your season last year in Pittsburgh and this year, where obviously the numbers are really good, is there one or two things more than that, or is it just you adopting to this relief role?
I think it's that, and then just how the relief role helps the mental side of the game for me.
Sure.
There's a lot of anxiety and stress the day of going into my starts, and now with the bullpen, it's just I put my focus on different things, and that's like getting ready, staying available, and instead of just sitting there all day thinking about their hitters and how I'm going to pitch and whatnot, it's just get ready, get loose, and stay healthy.
Is it harder for somebody who has a multi-inning role? Is there a little bit of a starter routine in there too, or can you just not do any of that?
Yeah, no, I mean I just completely go straight relievers routine. I play catch every day. The other day before my 4 innings, I threw 12 pitches in the bullpen to loosen up, which is my normal. And so I just keep it very, very reliever based. Yeah.
The cut fastball, is that something you started before Milwaukee or were messing around with? Like what's sort of the journey to get to the point where it's a pitch you throw pretty often?
Yeah, so last year I developed like kind of a slider, like 85, 86, and results were decent, but not great. And then this spring training, Hookie was like, "Hey, like let's just turn that into a cutter. Like throw it as hard as we can. Get them off the 4-seam and the 2-seam, and it's developed into a pitch where I probably pretty close to my most used pitch. And it just sets up everything else so well.
So you mentioned Chris Hook. I'm curious about Jim Henderson. We hardly ever talk about the bullpen coach. He's a former Brewers pitcher, so he has a little more notoriety here. But what does he bring to the how has there's been so many success stories in the bullpen. So how has he contributed to that?
Oh, he's awesome. Hookie work together so well. And Hookie does a really good job of letting Jim coach the relievers. And
sure.
And Hookie focuses mainly on the starters. And, you know, they help each other with each department, and they do a really good job. He does a good job of, you know, looking at every reliever and, you know, being honest about what he sees and what he thinks we should do. And he's big for us.
Coming up through the Braves organization, I think you cross paths fairly often with William Contreras. So do you have any stories? Any coming up through the minor stories of William?
Not a ton. No, I mean I threw to him quite a bit between AAA and the big leagues, and he's good back there. He's gotten so much better back there this year. Everybody knew he could hit. That was out of the question. But the defense has taken strides this year, and it's been unbelievable.
All right, sir. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. And once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.